Welcome, everybody, to Top 5, Top 5. We're talking the wide receiver 2020 NFL Draft. I'm your host, Abies Jesus, and I have with me the commissioner, who's back again, Ronnie Carlton. How you doing today, Ronnie?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm hanging in.
Having some technical difficulties, man. I think my son muted my mic on his way upstairs because it's bedtime, so he was a little ticked off, but he muted my mic, and I was
nice
talking
move.
To myself.
Interesting. Good move.
Anybody not familiar with the way the show is going to run, we're going to go and talk our top five in the wide receiver draft class, and then we will also add in one or two people that we think could also make a case for being in the top five, and then discuss the pros, the cons, what we might have seen on film, what people are saying about them, and then what we expect out of them at the next level. So we could just start with the number one receiver. I'm not sure who your number one is, so I'm curious to hear. Who do you have as your number one receiver in the 2020 draft class?
We're the same. It's your love child, Jerry Jeudy.
My man, Jerry Jeudy. Jerry Jeudy is, like I told somebody in the group this week, Jerry Jeudy walks on water until I see otherwise, and if for some reason he sinks, I'm going to blame the coach. I love Jerry Jeudy. He's everything that I want out of a wide receiver, although I will say that the more you read on him as you dig deeper, people are a little concerned with his hands. Mostly not that he can't catch difficult catches, it's just that he drops a lot of easy passes. And I saw somebody made a pretty good case, and their reasoning for that, they were saying that Jeudy's, honestly, when you watch him on film or even if you watch them live during the game, it's very rare that he's got people within arm's reach of him. So it could be that he's just not used to having to catch through traffic and things like that. So it's not necessarily a red flag, but something that does cause concern. Do you have any cons about Jeudy?
You're starting the podcast off making excuses for somebody already, bro.
I told you, he's my number one. I don't know,
in the
man.
Bag,
I mean,
bro. You're in the bag.
Nah,
man.
Man,
I
look,
love him.
Look,
I don't have
look, I get it.
I really
people don't
him.
Like his hands
but
per se.
Him.
But what's your – before we even get on, because I got 100 excuses for Jeudy, what's the most important thing to you when you're looking at a wide receiver? Like, let's say you're drafting a wide receiver and you're looking to add this piece to your team. What is the number one quality that the wide receiver has to have?
The ability to separate, create separation.
Okay.
And
okay.
If you're a big receiver, obviously you're not going to create as much separation. But at the catch point, you at least create separation like somebody like Mike Evans or somebody like that. But you have to create separation. However you run the route, however you figure it out, if you're a post-up guy, if you find holes and zones, if you run perfect routes, whatever you do, you have to get open. And to me, catching is not secondary, but to me, if you're in college football, your hands got to be halfway decent. Like, if hands are what excludes you from the conversation, you got a big problem that doesn't even need to be. Like, you have to be so T.O. to have bad hands and be successful.
True. I I'm along the same lines. I wouldn't classify it as separation, but I think that's exactly what I'm getting at when I say I like route running. I think people who can run routes are truly the special talents in the league, and they have to be crisp. Like, it can't just be – like, you can't be rounding out routes or cutting them short. You just have to be very precise. And I always go to Larry Fitzgerald as somebody that's just a testament to what being – a student of route running can really do for your career. Like, the guy can still get, he can still be useful in any system because his routes are so crisp, and it really helps your quarterback. It doesn't matter who the quarterback is, honestly. If you can run really good routes, the chemistry there just gets on point so much quicker, and it works wonders. So back to Jeudy, since you said I made too many excuses, you start with the cons of what you see in Jeudy and then talk about the pros.
There aren't a lot of cons. I mean, he's not 6'4", or I mean, I guess he could be a little bit bigger. There are concentration drops, I would say, like one of those where his eyes are getting too big and you try to like run before you catch it. I've seen that. I mean, his frame, maybe the durability. He's not going to win contested catches on a consistent basis just because of his size. He's going to have to get a little stronger when he faces press. But, like, all of these things are correctable and are very minor. And, like, Antonio Brown is not big and isn't too – I mean, he's built well, but not super strong. So, I mean, I think it's just his weaknesses are the weaknesses that you would have as a person that size. But he's an A prospect to me.
Yeah, I think my pro comparison was Antonio Brown. I just love the the acceleration he gets in his routes and his breaks and how he creates separation just off of just like you were talking about, like his feet and things like that. Like it's an art form, man. And I, like I said, I understand people got concerns about the hands, but like you said too, I think it's corrected and I don't really see a problem with it. Do you think Judy is worth the first round pick?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Oh my God. Like top 10 pick. Okay. If somebody picks him, like I guess 5 is the only time I would say, hey, maybe it's too rich for my blood is maybe 5. But other than that, like I'm good at Judy top 10, top 5 is probably too much, but he has the potential to be an Antonio Brown type figure. So when you have somebody that you can draw that kind of comparison, and if he is good, like that will be the style. That doesn't mean he'll have the same production. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, if you listen to this podcast, you're smart enough to know what his are. But the way he will win is the same way Antonio Brown won in the league. So mm-hmm. if you have somebody that has that kind of skill set, then hell yeah, first round, top 15, whatever.
All right, so rolling into your number 2. Who do you have as your number 2 wide receiver?
My number 2 wide receiver, I've been thinking about it. I've been going back and forth, and I just said, hell with it. I'm going to go with my gut, and I'm going to go with Justin Jefferson. I think a lot of people have a little questions of whether he can play on the outside or not. He did play mostly slot, but I just saw something in him this year that just made me think he was special, and I think that he will be able to play on the outside. Now, he'll never be your I think that's your X receiver that just plays on the outside and dominates like a Julio or something like that. But he can play Z, and you can play him in the slot, and you can run him in motion, and you can do all kinds of things with him. But he's a great route runner. He has good releases. He breaks off the stems well. He's just smooth. He can get contested catches. He can do, like, everything you want a receiver to do on a football field. Like, when you look at the definition to me of what a receiver is, that's Justin Jefferson.
So, I don't even have Justin Jefferson in my top 5. And it's not disrespectful. It's just, I told you I was going a little contrarian. So, listen, he's definitely in my
– I know KJ Hamler is not better than him, but whatever. But,
I know. And I'm gonna, when I get to KJ Hamler, I will explain to people why I got him there and whatever. And you can disagree, and it's fine. Jefferson is exactly what you said. He's everything you technically want out of a receiver. And when you were talking about the X and the Z spots, he does seem to me more like a Z type with the ability to run a little bit of – well, obviously you expect him to play a lot of slot. But I compared him to Jarvis Landry a lot when I was watching him and how he played. But I think he's a better athlete than Landry.
I think he's much better.
When you think about Burrow and the success of that offense last year, Jefferson was a key to that. I mean, his ability to just create a mismatch wherever he was at on the field. And then just, again, everybody in this, it doesn't matter who we're talking about in the top 5 to honestly the top 10 receivers in this draft class. They're all amazing athletes with the ball in their hands.
Yeah, they are.
And I think that's what's going to separate them in years to come. I think that's what has people very excited about the potential of this draft class is that it's not just guys who can catch or guys who are fast, but guys who are just amazing athletes once the ball is in their hands, and it creates so much like potential in what offensive minds can do with them, what defenses have to do against them to slow them down, et cetera. So I don't have any issues
also,
with Jefferson.
I want to say with Jefferson, just the production. It's silly for a receiver in a season to have 111 catches, 1,500 yards, 18 touchdowns. That's just silly. In the SEC, you say what you want about Burrow, the system. That's ridiculous.
So the one knock that I did see on him, too, which I'm pretty sure you're going to be like, that's ridiculous, because I kind of thought it was ridiculous, too, is that people don't like the idea that he can't potentially play, like, special teams or he doesn't have the ability,
what?
They said, to really play special teams. That was coming off your draft breakdown website that I was looking at early. Not your website, but, you know, the website
of
the people.
Yeah, I got a lot of sources.
Yeah,
bro.
So that was the one gripe. I think Jefferson probably has if he doesn't have the most reliable hands, it's only because CeeDee Lamb is just a man when it's one-on-one. But I see a lot of that in Jefferson too. Like he can catch through some contact and he's tough. So I don't have a problem with him being at your number two. My number two is CeeDee Lamb. I don't think most people would have a gripe about that either. But I would say I probably have more cons for CeeDee Lamb than I would anticipate for somebody being in my top two. But you were thinking, you know, the safest pick or going along the lines of just F it. I was pretty much on the same wavelength with my second pick, and I just went with CeeDee. I mean, he's a tough one-on-one matchup. I know he's somewhat limited, it looks like, on film because of the offense that he was in. Like, I think some of the complaints of people saying that when he's more active when you're pressed and you're man in his face, he likes the contact. But if you're not physical with him, if you drop back in zone and things like that, he tends to pretty much be one-dimensional in the sense that he's not going to beat you too bad if he can't get behind you. And I don't know. I think he's more of a traditional X receiver coming into the league. And I saw somebody compare him to Hopkins, and I thought that was a fairly decent comparison. But again, we're still talking about somebody that ultimately is just a man when the ball's in his hands and yards after the catch. Like he can really, like he can create plays. And it's weird because his speed isn't. Or I guess it's the quickness, like the lateral quickness isn't what you see out of Judy and some of these other guys that we're going to talk about. Not even out of, like Jefferson. I don't think he's quicker than him either. But it doesn't seem to matter because when he has the ball in his hands, he can create. So
and that's my question right there, though.
Yeah.
That's the question I've had with him, because watching him during the season, and I watch during the season for fun. I'm not breaking down what I think of them as draft picks. I like to see the cut-ups. I like to look at their attributes and all that. But he was the best receiver that I saw. But when you break it down and you look at his numbers, he ran a 4.5 on the dot, and you start to wonder, and I thought Peter Ward, about 2 weeks ago, I posted that on Twitter, who was very dominant and was impossible to catch. But there are plays where CeeDee Lamb is surrounded by 4, 5, 6, I swear to God, 6 people. He gets out of it and scores a touchdown. That's incredible. But is that CeeDee Lamb or is that Big 12 competition? Because the secondaries in the Big 12 were all-time bad. And I don't want to take anything away from him. I'm not a competition guy. But some of those plays are not – you can't duplicate that at the NFL level.
Yeah, and we we had briefly discussed that before the podcast, and I'll go ahead and say it on air too. It's rare that I look at a player and I judge the player or I judge the player's production by the competition that's around him, especially when I'm evaluating. Because to me, evaluations don't really – like statistics don't really play that big of a part in the evaluation to me personally. Like I don't care if you went for 600,000-700,000 yards. If you've got terrible route running and you're not that fast, then those are going to be the things that I check off. Like if you're getting separation, the ball's not coming on time and things like that, I'm not necessarily going to hold that against the receiver. I'm going to hold that more against the quarterback. So when I'm looking at the Big 12 corners, though, it's like they don't have a clue, man. Like the corners or the safeties, like they don't have a clue. And obviously CD is talented, but like you said, imagine somebody going up on six DBs in the league. Like that's rare. And this dude was doing that every Saturday. Every Saturday. Like, you couldn't be stopped.
It was ridiculous.
I also have to, in the same breath, give him credit, too, because he was productive with what I consider to be an inadequate quarterback. So there's that as well.
I mean, think about how many targets. I mean, think about how many targets he was getting, though. I mean,
true.
Now, I'm saying eventually, even Jalen Hurts with this limitation can find him eventually, or just throw a short to him and let him juke 8 people, which he was able to do.
So,
I'm going to say one more thing on this. That Greg Cosell, who's actually my favorite, more than PFF, which people don't understand. I'm at the church of Greg Cosell before I'm in the church of PFL. But he said his weaknesses, he said smooth and fluid more than sudden and explosive. Some questions, separation and quickness as a route runner. A little straight line and linear as a route runner. A little tight hip at times. The other thing he says is some outstanding individual run after catch plays when he has straight line space, but did not show a lot of lateral quickness and short area explosives with the ball in his hand. So, like, a lot of the stuff is what we're talking about. I just don't see, like, how he can duplicate that unless it's just special. Unless he just gets a special gear that whoever he plays, he's able to just shake them and get past them. But, you know, I try to go with tangible.
I agree with that whole assessment. You know, like when I watched him, that was one of the first things I kind of was hesitant on, too, is, like, I got to see some lateral quickness, man. You know, like, I'm not that quick, but still, I mean, I know what quickness looks like. I know what quick feet looks like, and it just didn't stand out to me. And the whole linear aspect of his game, I think is true. That's why I think he'll be more of a traditional X. I told you off the air that I saw some extreme spectrums. I saw people saying he was going to be Odell, and I saw people saying he was going to be DeAndre Hopkins. I'm leaning more to the Hopkins level. As far as separation goes, I mean, if he learns a good little push-off like Hopkins has, I mean, he'll be fine. And people get – I know sometimes people get mad when I say that, but it's true, man. Like, the dude pushes off. It's fine. He gets away.
A lot.
It's okay.
It's pretty bad.
It's just a subtle little tap, you know. It is what it is, and he's getting production from it. So I think CD could do that. Again, he's a man. He's a man. When you're talking one-on-one, going up to get it, jump balls, he's definitely at the top of that class of 2020 with that. And then the yards after the catch, he ain't going to run across the field, but he can be one of those one move and then run downhill and get you 3-4 extra yards even through contact. Which I think is solid. So I'm going to say taking CD, I don't want to take him above 10, but if you took him between 10 and 20, that's fine to me. Jefferson, I could see 10 to 20 as well. What do you think, Justin Jefferson? And he got dropped. All right, well, we'll just catch him back. When he calls back in, I'm sure he'll call right back in. But I was going to ask him, where does he see Jefferson and CD going? I know there's been a lot of talk in the draft about where people are going to get picked at. I'm just letting you guys know that me personally, I think with the wide receiver talent and their ability here this year, I think some of those traditional, well, that's too high to pick a receiver statements need to go out the window because these guys are playmakers. Ronnie, where do you see Jefferson going in the draft as far as a first-round pick? Do you think he's a first-round pick? And do you think CD is a first-round pick?
I think CD is a first-round pick, and I see CD going in top 15. I see Jefferson going in the back half of the second round, the late 20s, like 25.
Mm-hmm.
I see someone like Eagles or somebody picking him or something like that.
Okay. Where do you see them lining up at as far as, like, their position on the field? Do you see CD playing slot or having the ability to play slot? Do you see Jefferson moving all around? Where do you see them lining up at?
Yeah, I was saying Jefferson. I think he can play on the outside, at least to be a Z and you move around, you motion him. I see Jefferson as a Michael Thomas clone. So you move him all around, but Michael Thomas is everywhere. So that's how I see Jefferson and the way he'll have to win. I see CD playing some slot because I think he might have trouble early on with the releases. Not as much slot as Jefferson, who I think will live in the slot, but I do see CD maybe like 25% of the time in the slot. And I see like someone like the Jets or the Niners or somewhere in the teens probably for CD. I did a mock draft, but I don't have it with me to see where I had it going in my mock draft.
I mean, speaking as a Niners fan, if we can't get Judy, I mean, I would take Jefferson after that. I don't really think that's a big deal. I've looked at what my team personally needs, and I know there's a lot of question as to what kind of receiver that we need. I just personally think we need guys that can run a route tree, and I don't think CD's that guy. I think he's a little limited, and it's not really what I'm looking for in a receiver. But I know there's a lot of teams like CD. If CD went to the Bucks, that would be incredible. Like in the Aaron's offense, that's exactly what he needs, you know. But
I don't know.
There was some criticism of Jefferson. I'm gonna just stick with that for 1 second. It's just like some of this stuff just seems goofy because, like you said, when you look at the tape and you look at everything positive about the guy, you can't find anything in there that would say that he's not going to be a potential star in the league as far as receiver. But I mean, the
his releases are nice too, so I don't understand. Yeah. His releases are nice, so what are the complaints? But I don't see a knock other than, you know, he's not Randy Moss. I mean, what do you want? Like
he ran a 4.43? Yeah, he ran a 4.43 at the combine.
Yeah, like,
he's 6'1". He's 202 pounds. Yeah, I don't understand it either. But I like the idea of him going in the first round. I have no problems with it, even though I didn't put him in my top five. And like I said, I'll explain that later. So I'm gonna go ahead. I know it is disrespectful. So I put Henry Ruggs III as my number three receiver, and I got a reason for that. I might be falling in love with the speed, but I just have a reason for that. Who's your number three receiver?
I also have Ruggs, which I feel bad about because I started Lamb at second and I dropped him all the way to fourth. I guess spoiler alert, but yeah, I got Ruggs in there.
So my thing with Ruggs is that I mean, people keep talking about his ability to be close to the next Tyreek Hill, and I'm not gonna lie, I fell in love with that as a guy that he's just fast, and he's tough, man. And the kid really plays bigger than what he actually is on the field, and it's just. His hands are really reliable as well. And, I mean, honestly, with speed like that, and I know people probably going to point to Ross, oh, Ross has speed, but no, this boy is a different type of playmaker than Ross was. And I'm just saying, when you put him on the field, if you can get him in the right offense or somebody that's going to really move him around and create mismatches, obviously he ain't going to be an X. He's too small for that, but literally – stick him in the slot and move him around as much as you want and get him the ball in space, and he's going to make people pay, man. Make people pay. And I think with the idea of his literally the speed that he has, whether it was like a 4.2, like you got to put him in your top five. Like you just have to off potential alone. I mean, this is the league that we're in now. It's all about yards after catch. What can you do with this 5 to 7 yard throw that I gave you? Can you get me 12 to 13? And I mean, we give Patty a lot of praise for his ability to throw the ball deep, but think about how Tyreek Hill really hurts people. A lot of times it's shorter routes that he just creates more yards after the catch. And I think that's pretty much the evolution of the game right now, is people are going to take high percentage throws and allow these playmakers to operate in space. And this is the prototype for that.
And I like him, and I watched his film. He's so fast and so much running at the catch. But I've seen him go deep and just catch the ball in tight spaces and make contested catches. So there's a lot to like about him, and I'll go back and forth until draft day, probably with him and Jefferson, honestly. So there's like a barely any separation between those two for me. And like to have Judy to me is on a tier by himself slightly. He's like a notch above them. And then Jefferson and Ruggs on the same level. But I just – but now the only thing that's been starting to bother me about him is, A lot of times these fast guys don't work out. The super fast guys have a long history of not working out. And then I saw one of the old school, Gil Brandt, compared him to Darius Haywood Bay. He was all over him.
God.
He went in so hard. I was like, but, you know, I looked at it, like, it's possible. He doesn't do a good job of getting the ball off the line of scrimmage. But honestly, why is there no production? You know, there was a fantasy stat, actually. And basically, it's like what age your breakout age is. And they said they can judge your production as a receiver based on your breakout age. So the earlier your breakout age, as far as having productive stats, the better you are in the league based on stats. And obviously, his breakout age is a little bit later because this is what his third season before anybody was really talking about it. So, like, why didn't he produce? And he's not a straight line speed guy, but he's a fast guy. Mm-hmm. So those are the little questions that I have about him and the ability to get off of press.
Yeah, and I think that's always going to linger just because of his size anyway, the ability to get off of the press. But with his quickness, I mean, I'm 100% sure that people probably had those same concerns about Tyreek Hill and every quick receiver that's out there. I think with guys like Ruggs, you got to have somebody that's creative with their scheme. You have to at some point. Like, you can't just depend on this guy to outrun everybody and that's how he's going to get his yards and stuff. Like, I mean, the league, for what it's worth, like, they're creative in shutting down people. Like, they're positive attributes. So if you're running a 4-2 and you're running by everybody, they'll typically figure it out, like, you know, a way to slow you down. They can't slow down Tyreek because of the scheme, you know, and we talked about this in the group before, like Andy Reid's scheme and how he uses spacing to really get guys open, how he loves to give you the same look on certain routes, especially with Kelce, like to sit in the middle if you're playing zone, so you got to jump on that. But if you're playing man, he'll run Tyreek Hill behind that little squat in the zone that you used to see Kelce sitting. Now you're in man, he's sitting. Now you're in, like, you've got too much clutter, and Hill slips through, and he's free because people are running into each other, and he gets, what, like a 30-yard gain or something like that. So it's like little nuances like that. If you can get Ruggs in the offense that has that ability, then by all means, I think he'll have a great career. But, you know, we stick him with some of these guys that we know have no vision. And, I mean, I'm not going to call him out, Bill O'Brien. But if we stick him with people like that, then, I mean, yeah, he probably will be. He probably won't even be Darius Haywood Bay. He'll probably be – who's that kid from that used to return the kicks for the Redskins, Banks or whatever? He'll probably be that.
Yeah.
You know? But I'm high on him. That's why he's at my three, just the potential there. And I don't see how he can't be successful with his ability unless he goes to an offense that's just stagnant.
The Raiders.
All right, so you said what? The Raiders?
Like the Raiders, yeah.
I mean, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if the Raiders took him if they had the chance, because from what I understand, Mayock loves speed, loves speedy guys, and this is the speed of speed. Yeah, so if he falls to 13,
Derek Carr not throwing to him next year, the trigger, Gruden would just lose his mind, because Derek Carr is the king of the check down these days. He would lose his mind if he wouldn't throw to him.
I mean, we have a whole nother show for Derek Carr, and you know my hate for Gruden is next level, but it ain't Gruden's fault that Carr is still trash, that's for sure. especially out there with Honey Badger has said that 1 week when they were like, oh, we knew where he was going to throw the ball. I think I said something on our podcast about it, like once they started declining. But anyway, going to the number four, this is the one that everybody's probably – like this is the type of pick that you find out if people really listen to the show, because I got KJ Hamler as my number four receiver. So I'm going to see if people actually listen, because I expect to be added, especially from Corey, who's probably going to be like, what? So I'm going to explain why I got KJ there. I can't help but to think that this kid is the real deal as far as toughness and ability at the next level to really be productive. Like, I saw a lot from KJ in the sense that he didn't really have a lot of fear when he was going across the middle for the ball. He's definitely not the biggest of frames, but then you put the ball in his hands, and I would say he's probably top two, top three, arguably, in this class when it comes to yards after the catch and the ability. And he's super intelligent with the ball in his hands as well. Like, his vision is pretty good for a receiver. And then he also has the ability to be a return man at the next level. So I think that adds value to him as well. Who's your number four? You said you had CD, I think, earlier.
Yeah, I had CD, yeah.
But
okay.
I just think somebody like this is somebody that you can get in the second, third, fourth round or whatever. And he, if you scheme right, he can be a very special player within your system. But to put him this high as a gadget guy who in the perfect system is going to thrive, but you really going to have to carve out special sets of your playbook for a guy like that, I don't – if I'm going to put somebody in my four, it's going to be a guy who could be my number one no matter what.
I get that. But in my mind, and this is just probably me being – too ambitious. I feel like guys like Hamler are gonna play a bigger role in the league, where we're not gonna view them as gadget guys anymore, because there's gonna be so many plays and things like designed to get them the ball. Like they're just gonna become pretty much the main source of the system, like a Edelman basically. Like would you consider Edelman a gadget guy? I mean, he kind of is to
Edelman
some degree.
Oh, we have to look that up.
Yeah, he's not this small, but he's got time to add some size. He's
Edelman.
170 pounds.
Now,
soaking wet, maybe.
He's not going to add 5'9". Edelman's not 5'9". 5'9" and 176. How much size
man,
is he going
really,
on a 5'9",
176? He ain't really 5'9", man. They lying about that, yo. They lying about that. I saw that boy. He at least 5'10 and a half, man.
I watched the game on the, what do you call it, on the gym at the gym. I thought he was a running back. First time I saw him play.
So, look, they were like one of the.
I love him as a playmaker.
Yeah. On one of the tapes I watched, they were like, man, he was such a beast. And then he met Okuda. And I'm like, come on, bro. Like, Okuda pretty much done put clamps on everybody he touched. Like, if you really going to judge him off that game, then give him a break. Jeez. All right,
yeah,
Okuda shut him down. I mean,
that's not a fair assessment, because that's
how many people.
Generational,
I was about to be like, how many people in this class gonna say Okuda didn't shut him down? You know, if he got his hands on you, it was
a
wrap.
Be a long list of guys that Okuda shuts down. Period. It's just gonna be a long list of bodies for that guy.
Yeah, I'm probably gonna end up having to rechange this, because I did disrespect Jefferson, but I just like Hamler. I'm gonna run with it. I'm gonna run with it. He might be like 185 pounds. Maybe he'll grow an inch or two. I don't know.
He's like,
he is small,
man.
He is
they
small.
Just don't tell us about the football players. I don't know.
Now, I will say this. I'll veer off just a quick second. I want to make sure I'm saying his name right. Rager from TCU?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Now, I would
– Yeah, he
–
Yeah, I think he's what you want to see out of Hamler, really. But
yeah, he is kind of. And I was gonna say I wouldn't mind adding him at the four or adding Jefferson at the four. Those two are on my little like cheat sheet here with my notes. I had put Hamler, and then I put like a little check mark, and then like drew an arrow over to my others and circled Jefferson and Rager as well, because they're great talents. I wanted to say too that I didn't mention in the beginning of the podcast, one of the other positives about this draft class is that a lot of these kids at receiver are track guys, so they know how to run, which makes a ton of difference. And when you're talking about people, how they accelerate, decelerate and things like that, how they're shifting and changing speeds in their routes and things like that, and we're talking about footwork, and then just outright straight line speed as well. Like, track guys, they're making a name for themselves more now than they have in the past, because once the ball's in their hands and the things they've done with yards after the catch, I mean, Tyreek Hill is one of those guys. He ran track. I mean, it's out there. And I think Rager ran track. I want to say Mims was known to do some track. Ruggs was on there as well. And I think Hamler also participated in track. I wouldn't be surprised if Jefferson did either. Like, I mean, like a lot of these top guys in this draft class have some track background, and I think that's going to help separate this class as well. We'll round off with the number five. Who's your number five?
LaViscus. I think I said LaViscus or LaViscus, yeah. Whatever, Chenault out of Colorado. This kid, to me, has the potential to be really special. So raw, huge, chiseled body. He stands out from everybody on the tape, just out of everybody else. You know, he looks like the Incredible Hulk. And they line him up in a wildcat a lot of times, run after a catch. He can explode and go get the ball. He is just a monster. You give him the ball, he's going to run you over. You throw it up, he's going to jump over you and snatch it. He's just a physical freak. And I don't know. I keep mocking him to Baltimore, which would be scary. Like, he's that project, kind of like last year with the kid from Ole Miss. Well, I can't ever remember his name. Kind of like that.
Yeah, Metcalf.
The raw project. Metcalf. The raw project is not refined, but oh my God. Like, when you see somebody with those kind of physical tools, you have to try to refine it, because you don't want to face that. That's the thing. Do other teams want to face that? No. 6'1", 227, and he looks and plays a lot bigger.
Yeah, when you look at some of the scouting reports for him, I read one that said he played everywhere but offensive line. And it's true. I mean,
yeah,
he was everywhere. They even had the boy at quarterback in the Wildcat formation. And, you know, Jay said something when we made the list to see, you know, with people voting. He was like, F that dude. Like, if you want to see some tape on him, watch the Nebraska game. That man went off. He went off. But, yeah, physically imposing. When I read about him, even before I, like, really gave it a good look, just looking at the size and just his ability to just line up anywhere and not afraid of contact and just one-on-one, just dominating people for the ball, I drew the comparison to Anquan Boldin in my mind. I don't know if some people agree with that or not, but it would be a dream come true for Baltimore to have somebody like that, because he would add a whole nother dimension to their game, especially when they run the ball, because he is all about some contact, man. He's, like you said, big body receiver, and he's actually fast too, which I don't think people, and like I said prior to this, you know, there's some guys out here with some track backgrounds, but I want to say he was running under 4.42. So, I mean, I'm gonna fact check that real quick. On his draft profile,
I felt like he ran a good. I thought he ran a good 40, but I don't have it right in front of me.
Yeah, I'm gonna look it up real quick. All right, so it's saying 4.58. I thought it was faster than that. But all right, well, it's 4.58.
I didn't.
All right, never mind. But, I mean, shoot, still running a 4.58 at 220 pounds. But that's one thing, too, I wanted to talk about 40 times. They don't always tell the whole truth. And again, if you can run some decent routes and stuff, and that is one knock on him, is that he's got to refine his route running. But I think with the size that he has, you know, we talked about people creating separation. You ain't going to get around that frame a lot. You know, a lot of these cornerbacks ain't but 195 pounds at that. And then they're usually – they're still roughly around 6 foot, 6'1". I mean, that's – they're not – he's got 30 pounds on him, about an inch, and then you got to adjust for, like, arm length and things like that. Like, he's still be fine as long as he can continue to get separated and learn positioning and things like that, which – I think people are anticipating somebody will draft him and then work on him with that, because he did move around a lot in Colorado. I think because of that, he wasn't able to refine his ability as a wide receiver, but it was still good enough, you know?
Yeah.
One other interesting stat about Chenault, as far as that 40 time and why I think some people are not reading too much into it, I do believe – last year and the year before that, he was tops in the nation for, like, yards after the catch average, I want to say. Or he was up there. He's, like, top five in the nation with that. And you're talking about a guy that's running a 4.58 according to his 40 time. It could have just been a bad time. But, yeah, he's still got ability galore when the ball's out of his hands, and he finishes like a running back tight end. So, got to keep that in mind. Who was a guy that – you heard people talk about that you just didn't care too much for?
Gosh. The first name that comes to mind, but it's a work in progress. First one that comes to mind is Denzel Mims. Like, Twitter, draft Twitter loves Denzel Mims. And I haven't been able to, you know, I struggle with it. In the past, I feel like he's somebody I would really, really like. And he's very athletic, and he's very long, and he did really well at the Senior Bowl. But I just see, like, a lack of polish, a lack of competitiveness when you watch the tape in his game, that he will make the highlight catches, but he's not going to go, like, the extra mile to really – he's totally reliant on his athletic gift. He's not a horse, and he's not going to separate. I mean, he's not a dog is what I'm saying. He doesn't have the dog in it. And to play – like a Dez Bryant or like a even a Michael Irvin, but a Dez Bryant or a – I'm trying to think of somebody else who plays like Dez, who's big and plays like Dez. But whoever, to play, be that size guy and not be able to get separation but be a physical beast, you have to have the dog in you and be very aggressive, and he just wasn't on tape. So I can't co-sign somebody that's not going to – be aggressive, and if you're not a great route runner, how in the hell? I mean, you're not going to win in NFL just being more athletic than everybody. That's been proven time and time again.
Yeah, I wasn't high on Mims either. Some of that too is because, I mean, you know, I watch Baylor, I watch Big 12, and I watch a lot of obscure offense. Yeah, I was gonna say it wasn't a pretty offense at all, man. Like, it just wasn't. I get why you would draft him based off his physical tools and things like that, but in my mind there wasn't a lot to go off of on film to make me put him in my top five. So I was pretty low on Mims. Also, one I think that might surprise some people, not that high on Higgins. I'm not that high on Higgins at the next level. I don't know. I just personally think he's a little soft, man. I mean, you know, I made that joke about calling him frail body because he gets nicked a lot, and that bothers me because you got to play through a lot of that stuff at the next level, and it's like I can't have you going like to when I made the joke about being frail body, it was an Anthony Davis reference. I'm like, when the guy's on the field, he's amazing, but you're going to miss him for 2.5 quarters because he's got like a bruise or a strain or something like that. I'm like, dude, you got to get that together. And I get some of it, but it just turns me off a little in the face of his peers in this class. So I didn't put him in my top five. Actually wouldn't even put him in my top. He'd probably be more around like the 8 or 9 number, which I agree with draft breakdown on that. I think they had him around like 11. I wouldn't have him necessarily that low, but I wouldn't have him that close to my top five either.
I liked him better.
So, Yeah, no, I will say that. I do like him better than Mims, but the consistency of these Knicks, man, it just bothers me because you're going to get hit in the league, man. Like, it just happens. And I'm not going to lie, I personally think he kind of punked out a little against LSU. So, I mean, there's that too. So, I don't know. I mean, if I had millions of dollars waiting on me and this team had an unstoppable offense, I probably wouldn't play that hard either. So I'm not, I guess I shouldn't hold that too much against them. But yeah, so in conclusion, you guys can slam me for KJ Hamler. That's fine. I'm going to die on that hill, just not as quick as I died on this Winston Hill. I ain't backing him that hard. But this draft class, in my mind, should be special. I don't ever want to call anybody the best ever before I've seen anything on the film, but potential-wise, especially in light of the last like 4 or 5 draft classes we've had, there's potential for these guys to be playmakers all the way into what I think would be some third-round guys that are going to get picked up, could be playmakers and contributors for an extended period of time in the league. There are some gimmick guys in there. You know, Hamler's one of them. Like Ronnie pointed out, he's 5'9". He's a midget. He's 5'9". He's 170 pounds, depending on what he ate that morning. So you got guys like that. And then you also have just physical specimens like Chenault Jr., who's just a tank. CeeDee Lamb is a big receiver as well. Then you got your technicians like Jerry Jeudy and Jefferson as well. So I'm excited about this class. I'm probably the most excited about the wide receiver class, and it could be because I like Jeudy. But what's your overall take on this class and their potential?
Very, very deep. We didn't get to guys like Van Jefferson, this kid out of SMU that has supposed to have really good hands that we hadn't talked about. Donovan Peoples-Jones is not bad, and he really tested off the charts. We haven't talked about Michael Pittman, K.J. Hill Jr., Brian Edwards, who I really like out of South Carolina. I like Colin Johnson. I like Colin Johnson out of Texas a lot. We talked about Rager. There's a guy from the kid from Arizona State that a lot of people are high on. This is a very, very deep class, and I like it, like, a lot. I think we're going to find guys and know guys. There's a kid from Liberty, Antonio Golden. Like, just there's just such – I'm not high on, but he's out there.
Yeah.
Chase Claypool, Notre Dame, I'm not high on. But, again, they're out there. People like them. There's a lot to like, and you can wait. And I think this will be one of those draft classes where for the next 10 years we're going to constantly see guys produce out of this draft class from the highest levels to the middle class levels.
Yeah, for sure. And I think there's going to be some teams that are already good and just looking to plug in a piece, and they can find that in this draft at wide receiver if they're looking for a wide receiver piece. I really believe that. So I'm not sure what we're going to do next for top five. You know what? I know what we'll do next. We'll do DBs. So we'll combine them, cornerbacks and safeties.
You can find a good person to do. I mean, if you can find somebody else, that's cool too. But I love the DBs too, the DB classes. So I think DB is even deeper than wide receiver. And I think DB, everybody talks about receivers, but these DBs are here for days.
Yeah.
I really like the DBs.
Yeah.
I had a chance to watch them all. I've read up on a lot of them, and I watched a lot of them.
Yeah, and I was going to say skill-wise, like the technique of these DBs, man, and the number one thing that I absolutely love that has been killing me for years is that this class of DBs, they can find the ball in the air. Like they can cover and turn their heads and find the ball, and that means everything to me. Like there's so many guys, even some top-level guys that we have in the league that honestly can't turn their head around and find the ball. I mean, Byron Jones just can't find the ball. I mean, he can defend, just can't find the ball. And I mean, it matters. I mean, you get he gets 12 defended passes. He probably can maybe catch one or get his head around for one. I mean, that matters. But then there's other guys like Gilmore who can do it, or at least last year he did it at a such a great level that, you know, you have no problem with you know, what he does on defense. But they're both very good. But that literally changes the game. Like, if you're catching the ball instead of knocking it down, it makes a world of difference. And I think We've got some hybrid cornerback safeties out here in this class that can really change the game. I think the league is definitely transitioning to this positionless secondary. And I think we've got a lot of positionless guys in this class. And what you were saying, that makes it enticing. It's definitely a deep class. So we'll do that. I'll probably ask Marcus or somebody I know who knows how to actually play cornerback and safety and get them on here. If not, you're more than welcome to call in. I mean, you're Vince McMahon, so you can just call in and just butt in. So I'll ask Marcus. If not, I will do offensive line by myself. I don't care what Ronnie says. We'll just do it when he's not looking.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
So definitely keep an eye out for the next top 5. I will be back on my grind. If you guys are not paying attention, I am at like pick number 16 for our mock draft. So I will get back on grading those picks. I will also be grading the picks. I don't want to say live because that might be too much, but I will be grading the entire draft that we have in a couple weeks as well. So bear with me. I have more details on how I'm going to do that, but I'm also looking into doing that for the group as well because we still don't have sports. So out here doing what we can. Support your local horse racing.
Don't forget to give the podcast 5 stars for the podcast. We are listening. You rate, subscribe, give it 5 stars, write a review if you have time.
Yeah, 5 stars on the podcast. Check out our other content. I know Team Turnbuckle is out here producing every week. I think they had a WrestleMania podcast last week. Make sure you check that out as well. All right. Ronnie, thanks for calling, man. This has been Top 5, the wide receiver 2020 NFL draft class assessment, and we're done.
All right.